Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome in, everybody, to your Friday edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. Last week's travel for your host here, Jake Burns, was a little inhibitive to me keeping the normal schedule I usually do, which is visiting with John Colosimo on Friday. So had to pre-record a lot of stuff and, we get back to our roots here. I want to bring in John in just a second. We're gonna talk about a couple of fun topics, one not even remotely related to your Cleveland Browns and one is very related to your Cleveland Browns. So we are going to do that in a minute. I want to remind you of things that have happened this week. We had Peter Moses from Blue Wire on yesterday talking about Brownstown, some of the different aspects of that fun podcast journey that he did with Andre Knott. I had Andre on a couple times, but I want to get Peter's opinion too because he's a huge Browns guy and he did a lot of the work behind the scenes for the production, which was so good. So really enlightening stuff. And then he shares some of his opinions on what happened in 2021. So check that out. And then we had a little bit of banter back and forth on the Monday show where we talked about some different angles on free agents, wide receivers and interior D-line, as those discussions are going to become more and more deep divey, getting into players' names you probably have not heard as we go. So check those two things out. So today we are going to transition to a debate on saving three. We're going to do five. Was it five? I think it's five, maybe six. I'm going to welcome in John Colosimo. You know him, as we do every Friday. John, we're going to talk about these movies. They're comedies, the golden age of comedy movies, which are just like gone. Like it's just a genre here that has disappeared. And I don't know, dude, was it like old school, the kickoff from like old school to, I don't know, what's the most recent one that we've had? I couldn't even really tell you when it ended. Maybe like This Is 40. I'm not sure. The Apatow stuff ended. Am I off on that? Yeah. Tell me if I'm off.
Yeah, no, that's probably it, man, which, you know, This Is 40 is so depressing to me. But, I think that probably does mark right around where it was. And yeah, they really did have a streak there, man. I do think old school was the kickoff, like that was right.
God, that
I remember
so
seeing that for the first time. I was in basic training when they released it. So I went over a soldier's house or whatever I don't think it was basic electronics, but I think it was SATCOM training. I went over somebody's house, watched this thing on like a 20-inch TV, and I...
A fatback TV.
I spit take, laugh, like I could not control myself. So I think that just kicked off this massive streak that went on for a friggin' decade or more? And then, yeah, and you're right, it's just like, it's just gone. I mean, what do you get now? You get just like Adam Sandler rom-coms on Netflix, that they release every other week.
That are similar to, they've tried to recreate it a little bit. There was something that Jonah Hill's sister was in, Benny. I cannot remember the name of it, that was out recently that felt sort of like a version of Superbad, like a modern version. Hang on, I'll find this as we got cell phones up in front of us. Old School came out in 2003. You can tell John and I are not aficionados here, but we're really trying our best to get this right. I'm trying to find what the name of that. What's Jonah Hill's sister name? Benny Fow? I don't know, man. I suck at this. Let me get the computer going. We're doing this in real time, so you can make fun of me if you want, but this movie was pretty good. Jonah Hill's sister's Beanie. I'm saying Benny, it's Beanie. I hope some of you aren't laughing too hard. Beanie Feldstein. I had no clue until after I watched that movie they were related. What is the name of it? We're going to get there, John. I don't know if you watched it. Booksmart. It was called Booksmart. It was actually pretty good movie about certain kids getting into colleges and wasting your high school experience on studies when all the perceived idiots are also going to the good schools too, and you've wasted your entire career trying to be perfect academically and And anyway, it's a good one. Watch that one if you can. But anyway, here's the thing that was thrown out. You could pick five. We picked six. I think there were six that we picked. So I'll go through these, and I'll let you pick your six and sort of quickly justify them, and we'll talk about it. Grandma's Boy, which is Grandma's Boy. If you have never heard of it, I'm going to try to be quick with the type here. Grandma's Boy is an 06 movie. Obviously, Adam Sandler and his gang. Pretty funny. The Hangover, we all know The Hangover. I hope you've heard of The Hangover by now. You know, I think Hangover was what year? 2009. God, that feels like yesterday. Hall Pass is another one. Hall Pass is Owen Wilson and Sudeikis. That was 2011. Horrible Bosses, the first one, another 2011 movie. Due Date, I could not remember.
I couldn't remember that one.
Oh boy.
I immediately tossed that one out.
That was Robert Downey Jr. and Galifianakis in that one. Dodgeball, don't need to cover that again. Dodgeball might have been pushing the 2004. 2003 was old school. 04 is Dodgeball. 21 Jump Street, really good. 2012, The Longest Yard, kind of a random fit, but was pretty funny. This is the Sandler version. I did enjoy it. 2005, Pineapple Express. We know much about Pineapple Express. You know, James Franco's career has gone off the rails, but 2008, Role Models came out. Also 2008, a great year for movies. I think Superbad was 2008 too.
That might be right.
Superbad's 2007, my graduating year of high school. Talladega Nights came out. What year did Talladega Nights come out?
That's got to be like 06 or something.
Yeah, I think it was 06. If I could spell Talladega right, that would help. 06, you're right. And then Wedding Crashers. So that was 05. Of these, we'll get into our six we keep, but what one do you quote the most in your daily life? Like, if you just, like, you're with your friends or you're hanging out, what of those movies do you quote the most? Because there's quite a few that are pretty good.
Of these ones, crap. Probably Dodgeball. And maybe Role Models. One of those two.
Role Models is so underrated. It's so good.
So good.
Step Brothers is my wife's favorite. Absolutely loves it. I will say, I quote, and I don't know if it's correlated to, like, when I was coming out of high school anyway, and we just watched it and it was so relatable. Superbad. Like, there are infinite Superbad quotes that are in my life. Talladega Nights has a lot of them, but they're almost all kind of corny to me. I mean, it's a funny movie, but they're like, but Wedding Crashers too, man. As Wedding Crashers hasn't aged very well, but, like, it's got a ton of them. Like, what is it? Rule 76, Play Like a Champion, No Excuses, right, or whatever. There's a ton of those. Yeah. So
Vince
those
Vaughn
are...
is like a quote machine. Like, he was on that roll there with those movies. And he is definitely, like, I'm a sarcastic asshole. So he's a quote machine for me.
Yeah, great. He's probably the pinnacle. I mean, Ferrell's pretty damn good. And I think it's got to be those two. Vince Vaughn and Ferrell are the guys that stand out above all else. So we'll pick six. We'll go one. I'll let you do your list first. Go ahead. Kind of walk me through them.
All right. So Hangover, I think that just, you know, that was one of those ones that really just smacked, you know, smacked you over and over, like, laughed the whole way. I got Hangover, Dodgeball, Napoleon Dynamite. That is another one. My buddy got this weird movie. We're out. This is when Netflix was all mailed by DVD. We're in Germany in the Air Force. So that was, like, super popular. Burn them and send them back. Whatever the case. So he gets this weird movie, Napoleon Dynamite. And I like quirky, weird comedies like that anyway. So, yeah, that I can understand if that's not everybody's cup of tea. Role Models, Pineapple Express, and Wedding Crashers is where I'm at.
Okay, what's your hardest to leave off? The one you had a hard time not putting in your list?
I think it's Grandma's Boy, to be honest. Like, I enjoy it, but it's silly. You know, like, it's a very silly one, but that would probably be the one that was closest to sneaking in.
Napoleon Dynamite, $400,000 budget and made $46 million.
It's so ridiculous.
It's absolutely so... ridiculous, dude. And like the Uncle Rico stuff is all time stuff, man. Like,
yeah,
a football over them their mountains is just it's so random. That movie was so. I have to think they're making it, and they're like, is anybody even gonna like this? Because
yes.
it could have been so bad, right? Like,
oh my god,
it could have been so bad. You know, like,
no, I 100% agree. It's like so weird. That's a perfect way to say it. They had to like, you know, that's a wrap, and then be like, I don't know, man.
I really don't know. I don't. It was, God, it was random, dude. So random, but it hit every part of it. Every part of it hit. I don't know how. Or how they knew it would, but all of it hit. So mine would be Grandma's Boy was really funny to me, and it was funny to a lot of my friends, so that one's in there for me. I felt like The Hangover was a mark of, like, the next phase of comedies after the early portion, like the 03 to 07 era, and then you got like, Bradley Cooper, and that was, like, the first time I remember Galifianakis and how funny he was with Carlos and the whole baby thing, like... It was really good. It launched a bunch of people I felt like that you kept seeing in those movies, right? So I liked that one. The second and third editions were rough, but the first one was really funny. It's hard to leave off Dodgeball. I'm not a huge Horrible Bosses fan, a Due Date, whatever. I think the one that's hardest for me to leave off is Napoleon Dynamite because it was so damn funny, but Pineapple Express is like peak. It's just peak, peak everything, man. Like, and it's so rewatchable funny. Like, we've watched it lately, and it's just so damn funny. It's great. Role Models to me with Little Ronnie, and like everything about Role Models, like the what is it? The, I don't know if they call it cosplay. What's the name of the thing they do?
Layer or whatever. It's just like a role playing thing. I don't know. Yeah, that was. I don't know why people don't consider that more highly. Like, that just makes me laugh so hard.
Oh, there's so many good one liners. Like Paul, and it's peak Sean William Scott. He'd come off of all of those American Pie movies, and this role, and him in the chemistry he had with Paul Rudd and what's her name, Jane Lynch. Where she's got the hot dog in the office, it's not the office. I think she has it at the gas station. You know, can't BS a BSer. Like, dude, those scenes, I do not understand how they kept it together. Even if it took 30 takes, the way she delivers it is so funny. But that movie is so rewatchable and funny to me. It's really good. But Superbad is right there, 1A, 1B to me to Pineapple Express. Superbad is, at least for me, it was like, I know that Jonah Hill was in other things. I think he was in Old School, wasn't he? Didn't he have a brief little cameo in Old School? I think he did. Maybe he didn't. I can't remember. He had some early cameos and things where I'm like, that's interesting. I feel like he did, but I could be wrong. But like that group, when they introduced all of those guys together and the McLovin and the, you know, drawing, you know, what types of foods are shaped like, it's like, I'm so, dude, I'm telling you, that movie I quote nonstop. And I don't know if it's just my friends or it's a mark of the time. I don't know, but that movie is constant quote worthy. So those are mine. So Superbad, Step Brothers, Pineapple Express, Role Models, Hangover, Grandma's Ball, Napoleon Dynamite's tough to leave off. Wedding Crashers is, it's really good, but it's just the premise is so goofy that sometimes I can't really totally get behind it. You do get, that's the first exposure to Bradley Cooper I can remember.
I don't think I'd seen him before that.
When he was Sack or Zach or whatever they called him. But yeah, I just want to go through those because it's such a, you posted it today and I was like, ah, man, this is such a good topic because it marked like 03, I mean, you're a little older than me, but 03, I'm in high school, you know, and it's all really, you start to understand all those jokes, and it's just,
and they
it was
want
so
you to
good.
Take three out of this, like, taking three out of this, there's just no way I'm making it to three.
It's impossible. And they left a few off, too. I mean, old school should be in there, and I couldn't leave it off if it was, right? Like, I couldn't leave it off.
Yeah.
But the one that I don't think people, there's two. Role Models and Grandma's Boy, if you have not watched those two, I can't really encourage that enough. So get out there and watch them. We're going to switch over to Browns content. Before we do so, though, a quick little break from our sponsor.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, we're back. John, we're going to do a little fun exercise. This actually originated from a place you and I both wrote for a while at WFNY, which is a great independent site up in Cleveland. Michael Bodie, who's a very smart dude, does writing on the side, does a great job, smart guy, good baseball takes, and really sharp Browns takes as well. Turn me this idea in like 2018, I think. Hey, man, this is a thing I do. I look at the end of the year, which players on the roster are of what quality, right? And there's four tiers of quality. I've added one, right? It used to be just three. I added one. It was a little more excruciating back when the roster sucked. Now it's a little easier because you can really identify. There's not as many judgment calls. So I added, originally it was high quality, okay? High quality was a minimum of starter snaps on at least half of NFL teams. There's roster worthy, which is minimum of a likely 53-man roster spot on at least half the teams. And then replaceable as fringe guys on future rosters. You know, they could be a practice squad guy. They could be a very bottom of the roster, but they can be let go. They're replaceable. That's a perfect word for it. I added elite because I do think the Browns have elite players, and I think you need to separate high quality from elite. You know, I don't think, for example, J.C. Tretter, who I like a ton, is on the same level as Joel Bitonio, right? You know, so I differentiated there a little bit. So I want to have your opinion on these. I'll tell you what I put, and you can tweak any of them you would like and shout at me, or we might just agree and we might spend 5 minutes on this, so keep it organic. Quarterback play, they have three guys on the roster. I went with the most current roster on the website, so shoot me if I miss somebody you wanted me to add or subtract because they're not, whatever. And again, this is not a study of like, hey, this is going to be, this guy is here next year. I'm just looking at the status of the roster as the year ends. We'll see if they deem some of these guys capable or not capable. Okay, so I went high quality for Baker Mayfield because I do think half the teams in the NFL he'd get starter snaps for, roughly. It's like give or take a few. Maybe we'll get this answer from if somebody wants him. I don't know, but I mean, this version of Baker Mayfield, definitely some debate to be had. But last year's, you know, it's certainly a fair argument to think half the team. So I went Baker high quality, roster worthy is Keenum and replaceable is Mullins. I could be talked into switching those two or putting Nick Mullins up in roster worthy, but when he was on a practice squad and nobody really wanted him, it's hard to say he's a roster worthy player. And maybe you could argue that Keenum isn't either, but I feel like Keenum would be a backup on half the teams and they'd be okay with it. Not at the figure he's making, but that's at least my general feel about the player. Do you agree with those or would you tweak any?
Yeah, I think I probably would flip Keenum and Collins just because it's hard for me to get around the salary, and I just don't find them to be that much different. Mm-hmm. And also it goes into how I view the importance of backup QB, which I'm pretty low on personally. So I understand there's situations that pop up, and certainly coming off this year, that might be a little more glaring than it would be most years.
Yeah.
But I think that would be the only tweak, and it's not something I'd pound a table on.
Okay. I could agree with that. I could see it. We did running back next. We did, I did elite of Nick Chubb, high quality of Kareem Hunt. And elite is like, you're in the top five at your position to me. Like you're really, really good. High quality. I put Kareem Hunt. Roster worthy, D'Ernest Johnson, Demetric Felton, replaceable, a bunch of guys. Like, I view your fullbacks are pretty much replaceable across the NFL, unless you're Juice Check out in San Fran, a difference maker. Maybe even could talk me into CJ Ham in Minnesota, but Stanton, Janovich are replaceable, and then guys who are on the fringe. Even though I like John Kelly, I think he's got, you know, potential to be something more. We'll see. Trey Harbison and Dexter Williams are also names from the practice squad or fringe into the roster future deal. So I think Nick is pretty obviously elite. The data backs it up. Kareem, I think you could really try to talk yourself into that, but I think Kareem's like a top 15, top 12 back. And to me, that's not really elite. It's pretty dang good. He's high quality. He could start on a lot of teams, but you know, I just don't think he's quite elite, but I could come off that, and you can maybe even talk me into D'Ernest Johnson being high quality. Any tweaks there?
No, this one I'm in complete agreement with here. I think you got it right. We got an elite guy. We got a very high quality guy. You can debate where it is, but I'm not going to be the one talking about having two top five backs. I don't really think that's the case. And that's not a knock on him. There's a few players. Yeah.
Yeah. He's over 500 yards. He's a restricted free agent. I don't know where D'Ernest is going to end up or if he stays here another year, but I think he belongs somewhere, right? I think he belongs somewhere. And like I said, you could really talk me into the way running backs work, that he could be a starter-worthy player on 15 teams. I think you could, but we need a little bit more. Need a little bit more. Wide receiver, obviously no elite players, high quality. It could be a stretch with the way Jarvis performed this year to put him as a high-quality player. I do think there are enough bad receiver units around the league that he would get starter snaps on about half the teams, because some teams use three wide receivers far more than Cleveland. So I had Jarvis there still. Donovan Peoples-Jones, Anthony Schwartz is roster-worthy guys that would be on 53-man rosters on half the league pretty convincingly. And one you could argue with is Rashard Higgins. I put as replaceable Jamarcus Bradley, Ryan Switzer. I just like Higgins goes for 24 catches, 275. He's had these years of like, oh, maybe he's something, 500 and some change or 600. And then he's just kind of falls back off the face of the earth. And that to me kind of screams of a replaceable player, that he's a fringe wide receiver 4, 5, 6 on whatever roster you want to put him on. But I could be talked out of that. Do you have any of them there?
No, I think you've got it right. I don't think this is Jarvis's best year, challenging year for the injuries and that kind of stuff, but I think that you're right in where you placed him. And, some of these other guys are young and they're trying to figure out their niche in the NFL, and we're hopeful for them, but there's no reason to have them any higher than where you did. Dimitri Felton could fit in. You had him at running back, but he could fit in just as well with DPJ and Schwartz, and we'll figure out with Schwartz. After a rookie year, I'm not going to make any big things, but certainly there, I am very concerned about his ball tracking skills.
And I'm just concerned that the football speed doesn't translate to the track speed. That is a thing that happens, and I'm just a little nervous that he doesn't seem to have that gear that I thought he would instantly display. And that doesn't mean he's not fast. I just thought he would be a little more now fast than he is. Maybe he's just got a lot of buildup to the process, and that to me is a bit of a problem for what he's supposed to do really well. You know what I mean? So
agreed.
Tight end, I have no one in the elite category. Debatable here whether Austin Hooper is high quality. I think people are really fried out on him. I understand the pre-cut June 1st date and all that stuff. I'm of the belief that people were really happy when Austin Hooper was targeted, right? Like, oh, okay, throw it to him. And David also is high quality. Neither of those guys are even in the realm of elite, but I think they're both high quality to the point that they would get starter snaps on half the league, and roster worthy Harrison Bryant. And then Steven Carlson, Miller Forrestall, and Nick Gugamos, I think I got that right, are replaceable guys. I don't know that there's much debate to be had here. If you hated how Austin Hooper played this year and you despised him by the end of the year, you could talk yourself into that guy's roster. I mean, Hooper's still serviceable. He blocks really, really well. And I know he's not the receiving threat we all hoped he would be, but for the most part, if he had more outside help, not saying he needs Julio Jones, maybe he does, I don't know, but he needs help on the outside to alleviate and give him some open opportunities that are not beating pressure coverage, right? He cannot handle separation pressure coverage. And we all want David to have a bigger role. We haven't quite seen it yet, but I hope there's a future there. But I think both those guys are high quality. I don't know if you disagree or not.
I'm one of the guys that's pretty low on Hoop right now. I think after two years of the experience, there's no arguing that he's an excellent blocker, but I think I can honestly say after 2 years, I am kind of baffled by how poor of an athlete he is. And, comparatively, obviously not comparing to myself, but if you're not an explosive tight end, then you got to catch. And this year was especially tough on him in that regard. He can't create any, separation. I wonder who was the tight end that we had? I think he was with Fels, right?
Yep, that's right, Darren Fels. And then you had a couple others too that were kind of fringe guys, Ricky Seals-Jones, right. And then who else am I thinking? There's one other guy. I can't remember him off the top of my head, but yeah, go ahead.
For the life of me, I can't say, like, and I know that this is fresh, right? So, you know, maybe a few months from now I'll cool down and I'll feel differently, but I don't see that you're getting much more out of a Hooper than you got out of a Fels. And, you know, like I said, I acknowledge I got some fresh stuff here, and certainly his salary and, you know, and expectations are always the thing, right? You know, you have, if you start with the high expectations, bringing in like a Pro Bowl type tight end, you expect to get a whole lot more out of them than I think that they've gotten out of Hooper. And maybe he turns it around in year three, maybe they cut him. I don't know. I just personally am not in a place where, you know, I just knock him down a peg in your rankings. But other than that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I get it. A lot of people are frustrated with him, and it's a huge lesson on understanding how guys found success. And again, back to the original point, I understand why they signed him. They needed a professional in that room. There was kind of some immaturity stuff still going on with David. He was coming off an injury. They needed a player they thought they could trust. I think that they were, I would say, communicating in the offices when they offered that deal about we expected more upside from him. A huge lesson on it's like the Dalton Schultz situation. Ironically, two guys from Stanford, the Dallas tight end, who's having a nice year, very similar statistically. And it's like, well, you know, when teams prepare for Dallas, they don't want you throwing to CD. They don't want to give up, you know, the Michael Gallup and the Amari Cooper completions. They want you to throw to Dalton Schultz. And like, that's a part of the plan. And if you're doing that, you're not throwing to those really, really good players, and then that's a better overall scheme plan. And that's kind of what Hooper was dealing with when he was in Atlanta. You know, his last year is his best year. Well, look at the guys, Ridley and Julio, who are taking the heat off of him, right? And it's like, that matters at the end of the day. I still think even as the coverage gets tighter, you get less umbrella coverage in Cleveland, where they're two over guys on the outside. They're not bracketing those. So that's an extra defender clogging a lane that you typically have an opportunity to thrive in, right? So that makes it harder. More man-to-man coverage because they're less worried about separation stuff. Just hard. The level of opportunities for Hooper are harder, and that's where you start to realize, like, oh, this might not be worth the level at which we paid. So I think there's a big lesson there about the level of athlete you bring in for that position if you expect to give them 60 targets in a season.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of the reason, you know, part of the thing with tight ends is that if you have the right one, then they're a big value because of the way the salary cap works and, you know, and what their market is out there, right? So that's part of like the enticement of having a guy like a Kelsey who, you know, is vastly underpaid for the kind of impact he makes. You know, so when you pay at the top of a tight end list, I mean, you know, anybody that may have spent the last few years upset about the kind of money that Jarvis makes, I'm sorry, but like, to me, you know, like Hooper makes Jarvis look like a value compared, you know, as far as in and out, what you're getting, you know, comparatively around the league, what you pay for there. I just think it's so much under what you would expect to put that kind of money into a position that just doesn't make a ton. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I think it's tough because both guys, you need to be, if you're not going to run away from people, you're not going to consistently separate, you got to catch everything then. You got to catch everything. Yes. And they didn't catch everything. And that's a big part of the frustration is, if you're going to be a possession, air quotes, possession guy, you better damn well possess it. And they didn't possess it the way you could justify. Well, you know, he didn't really get any yak yardage, but he blocks his butt off and he catches everything in the general region. You can get by with that sort of shrug and statement, right? But if you're, well, he's also dropping the football too, he's not as reliable, then you start getting into what purpose does he serve, right? Consistently to threaten the defense. So we'll talk more about Hooper later in the offseason because there's huge decisions looming. We'll close on the O-line. It's clear Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller are paid like the elite players that they are, you know, guys that are top of the – I think Joel Bitonio had his best season, first-team All-Pro for the first time. He's had All-Pros but not first-team. And then you know, Teller's a pretty good young player. He's going to keep getting better, but they're paid like elite players. I think they are at the position. High quality is Treader. To me, he's a high-quality center. Conklin, we'll see what they do with him as far as just talent evaluation goes. First-team All-Pro last year. Some would argue whether that was true or not, but I think when healthy, he's a pretty good player, obviously. And then Jedrick Wills to me would get look around the league at other, you know, other teams' tackle situations. I know Jed is not a perfect player yet, but to me a very high quality player still, and plenty of room to develop. Roster worthy: Chris Hubbard, James Hudson, and Nick Harris. I think are all roster worthy players for half the league. Hudson started to come out at the end of the year. Nick Harris, the Packers game was really fun. I like his to the point I've made about, like, I would be comfortable if they let Treader go and Harris was your starter. I think he's good enough. And then replaceable: Blake Hance and Michael Dunn. Good players, I like them, but are ultimately replaceable to me. Drew Forbes, Hjalti Froholt, I think I said that right. David Moore, Elijah Kansa, and then Alex Taylor are replaceable. Would you move any of those around?
No. I wouldn't, but, you know, obviously the tough part there for, you know, Hubbard and what's his name?
Hudson? Harris?
Our tackle. Injuries may wipe them off the roster alone, you know?
Jack Conklin.
Conklin is a steal of a deal in terms of salary and that kind of stuff. I mean, he's definitely not an all-pro type, but definitely a quality guy, and I would argue that he was an all-pro, but still a very good right tackle. And for the money, everything's good there. But I wonder that if either him or Hubbard can be rosterable with these injuries, you know, with their salaries at least.
Yeah, there's a decision there with Conklin and how serious that knee injury is, right? Like, that whole thing is definitely looming. So. You know, I think you could talk me into moving around, maybe Dunn up to roster worthy. I like Michael Dunn a ton. I was kind of cautious on this, but it's a good group. A lot of high quality. I don't, compared to other teams that have, not had many high quality players, they have a significant amount of high quality. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the O-line, 2 on the tight end side, 1 wide receiver, 2 in the running back department, and a quarterback, right? So I think, to me, it gets interesting that there's enough talent. It shows to me on offense, and we'll do defense next week, but there's clearly enough talent to get this thing done. At least that's my opinion, and I don't think that's any secret, but it's nice to see it on paper how many high caliber players they have on the roster.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree, although it does definitely, I would say that doing this exercise certainly emphasizes the point that people are making on the need to upgrade at wide receiver.
Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When you look at the wide receiver, that it that it's pretty bleak because there's only 3 of them that you would even consider in those upper tiers whatsoever, even to roster-worthy guys. So, yeah, that is a glaring, obvious situation that needs to be addressed on offense. We kind of thought they were going to take one last year, and now we're definitely positive they got to figure it out this year. A lot of different ways to do it. This was fun. A lot of movie discussion. Some good stuff on offense. Maybe we'll get together. Maybe we'll get together next week and do defense. I'll probably aim to write it at the end of the week again. A lot of talent on that side of the ball too. Especially when the links in this article, if you find it at the OBR, have the 16, 17, 18, and 19 versions, and they were bleak. So some perspective to be had there. Thanks, John, for joining. I know everybody loves your perspective. And all that great stuff. So we appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate it, Jake. Had a great time.
Thanks again to John for coming on today's episode. Always appreciate him spending his Friday evening. Well, it's his Thursday evening with me to put out a good show on Friday, one of the best of the year. I think is the Friday episode stuff. It's always been a blast to me. We'll keep doing them as long as John finds time. He's got a couple little ones at home, and that can be a challenge in and of itself. So we'll try to keep meshing schedules as best we can. Thanks to you guys for checking out all the episodes this week. We'll have a mock draft over the weekend, a live one that I'll do with a guest. Not sure who the guest will be yet, but we'll figure that out on the fly. It's time to mock draft quite often. We're going to do it a ton. We'll see what happens in terms of how these rankings shake out and what the wide receivers look like. I'm just getting into the film study of all of it, so there's a lot of moving parts going on there. But I think it's fun to do this at the early portions and then see what happens closer to the draft to compare. So anyway, thanks for today's, checking out today's episode. Thanks for supporting the OBR through the Twitch, the website, or this pod. And I appreciate you guys so much. Have a great Friday, and go Browns.